Technorama episode 527. We're back, baby.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video. Over there, in the media corner.
Fail.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Wow. I reached for the wrong mute button, then I hit solo, and it just went downhill from there. We're on a good track.
Yeah.
I was supposed to say it's been a while, and I forgot where I left my keys to the podcast. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that tries to get off the ground, but, you know, rarely ever succeeds.
Whale-oiled machine.
Whale-oiled?
Whale oil.
You can't use whale oil anymore for anything.
Is it illegal? I don't know.
Stop killing whales to make whale oil. Stop killing babies to make baby oil.
Yeah.
And stop killing alligators to make Gatorade. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. I apologize for that crazy introduction, but you know what? That's sort of the spirit of the whole show. We just keep going. We're here to have fun. If you're a returning listener and viewer, you know this, and thank you. Welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and joining me with always, right over there,
as always,
is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I'm bathing in whale oil right now.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. It's for that sunburn, huh?
That's right. A little red on the face. Yes.
He gets
doing good.
One day of sunshine and he takes advantage of it.
There you go.
Yeah, big time.
Also joining us here in the Binary Studios in sunny Phoenix, Arizona are...
Keith
and Ben.
Better known as...
The Two Gay Geeks.
And they're here to hijack the show. So anything is
today
possible.
Today we have Ben and Keith. I'm sorry, we're picking up Carl.
From the Castle Anthrax, I guess.
Yes. And now.
No.
Let's stop spanking there. Today.
And afterwards,
the rest of the show.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters
every day.
Every day, including Sunday.
Are we doing the dance?
Some kind of dance.
Those letters, I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy!
Mailman, mail today.
Hey, we need to change that doorbell. Kind of stick in there in the last little...
I'm going to bring up the video on the video screen so we can have somebody
say
hi. By
the way, I love Ben's dance moves over there.
Oh, thank you. The only problem with this camera being so close is you can't see my arms doing the dance.
Move them in closer to your head.
I did.
Do the T-Rex dance.
Yeah.
Our question, if you remember back on February 11th.
February 11th?
That's the last show
we
did.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it's been a while. Was if you were dropped off in 1870, what job would you be qualified to do? And we got a note from our wonderful longtime listener, Kyle Nishioka, better known as Mad Marv, who said, well, fortunately, if I got dropped in 1870, I'm still qualified to be a civil engineer.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that time frame is more about railroads, bridges, and canal building, and probably not much of what I actually do these days. It's hard to imagine what the 19th century versions of infrastructure was like, but I'm sure I could design it.
There you go.
How about you guys? What would you be qualified to do in 1870?
Take out the trash?
Shoveling the barn.
Yeah, that's about it.
Make a garden.
Yeah.
I'd be the manager of the general store.
Yeah.
They watch the people come in, help them get their goods, that kind of thing.
Well, maybe work for a newspaper.
Newspaper? Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Typesetting yeah. was oh so fast.
Oh.
You can, you know, but we can claim blogging before yeah, but, it was cool.
Yeah, but you know, I think I might be able to, I may be qualified to do some kind of reporting since we kind of do that anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Mrs. O'Leary's cow just knocked over a lantern. Film at 11.
Right.
Yeah.
Paper tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe.
Unless it burns down.
Anyway. Craig, what were your thoughts on that subject?
You know, I really racked my brain on that, and I'm like, I don't know if I could take my skill set back then. I don't know what I could do.
I'd go to sea and see what I could see and probably get whale oil.
I grew up in the lumber business, so I probably could do that.
I have a feeling I'd be sweeping the general store.
I can do that too.
Hey, we got a shipment. Go bring all those sacks of seed up here. Okay. That's what I'd be doing.
Load them up, Craig. All right, we have to pass out the D20s. It's history time.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
And I've got it right.
My nose is itching.
Take one down, pass it around. Oh. This is more of a drop than a roll. Oh, I can't even cheat my way out of this. I
91.
I rolled a 1 twice.
91. Oh, I'm sorry. That's 16.
Yeah. I got a 5. All right,
here we go.
I'm done.
Oh, I got a 13.
A 13? So 16. 13. What'd you get?
A Keith? 5.
A 5.
What'd you get?
A 1.
Wow. You need to get some new dice.
Yeah.
You need to get some new dice.
A 1.
So.
All right, so it's
me,
Ben, Craig.
Keith, and then you.
That doesn't go around in a circle.
No, it doesn't. It crisscrosses a bit.
More like a star pattern.
Yeah, sort of a star pattern. It's an X.
We'll try to keep up, listener, but if we get out of order, we apologize.
Well, we'll just step on each other like we always do.
Let's roll the music.
Let's try and trick Craig into the tough ones.
On this day in history for March 21st, 2018, this is the 80th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 285 days remaining in 2018.
It was on this date in 1871 that journalist Henry Morton Stanley begins his trek to find the missionary and explorer David Livingstone. Professor Livingstone, I presume?
Also on this day in 1925, the Butler Act prohibits the teaching of human evolution in Tennessee.
Holy moly.
I think the rock and roll geek had something to do with that.
Yeah. It was 90 years ago today that Charles Lindbergh is presented with the Medal of Honor for the first solo transatlantic flight.
Woohoo! It was also on this date in 1963 that the Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary in California closes due to insufficient school funds.
Mm-hmm. And NASA launches Ranger 9, the last in a series of unmanned lunar space probes, on this date in 1965.
1965.
And 53 years ago today, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. leads 3,200 people on the start of the third and finally successful civil rights march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama.
Finally got across that bridge. Yeah.
Also today in 1970, the first Earth Day proclamation is issued by Joseph Alioto, mayor of San Francisco. San Francisco.
Also on March 21st, 1994, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change enters into force.
Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones become the first to circumnavigate the Earth in a hot air balloon on this date in 1999.
You know, Bertrand Piccard is the great, great, great,
great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great grandfather.
Right. Of Jean-Luc.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. It was 12 years ago today that the social media site Twitter is founded.
It's the Twitter?
The Twitters.
Yes.
Twitters.
I have the Facebook,
I probably had an account there for 12 years, to be honest with you.
And I have an Instantagram.
Instantagram?
Happy birthday goes out on this date to American inventor Mary Dixon Keyes, born on this date in 1752.
Joseph Fourier, the French mathematician and physicist, was born 250 years ago today. No relation to that strange woman who gave me a Facebook Messenger invite a couple of days ago with the same last name.
Uh-huh.
What?
And so born March 21st, 1839, Russian pianist and composer Modest Mussorgsky.
Yes.
American astronomer and astrophysicist Antonia Murray born on this date in 1866.
I'm so glad Ben got the Russian musician name. Yeah. I was struggling with that.
Really?
Modest Mussorgsky?
Modest Mussorgsky.
Yep. Okay, good. I got that one nailed now.
George David Birkhoff, the American mathematician, was born 134 years ago today.
Oh, goody, I get this one. Jewish Austrian mathematician, physicist, and philosopher from the Vienna Circle, Friedrich Weissmann, was born 122 years ago today.
Forrest Mars Sr., American candy maker, created M&M's and Mars Bar, was born on that same date in 1904.
It's a good thing he didn't make chocolate laxatives, or everybody would be saying, run, Forrest, run!
I don't get it.
Run for Mars!
I hope you don't get it. American businessman and co-founder E.J. Gallo Winery, Julio Gallo.
I knew he'd do that! Date.
He got it wrong.
Julio!
I think it's Julio Gallo.
Julio, I'm sorry.
It's Julio Gallo.
And it's not, it's also E&J Gallo Winery.
That's what I said.
No, you said E.J.
E&J. I was, never mind.
E&J.
Go to the next day.
He's not old enough to remember the commercials.
Yeah.
I do, what are you talking about? I remember the commercials.
It's Julio Gallo.
I don't know. Just move on.
Move on. Born March 21st, 1911, African-American scientist and inventor, Walter Lincoln Hawkins.
Russ Meyer, American director, producer, and screenwriter, was born on that same date in 1922. Is that the Meyer from MGM?
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer?
No, I don't think so.
No, it's Louis B. Mayer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, yeah. I knew I could count on the film guys for backing me up on this.
And born March 21st, 1927, American-German astronomer and critic Halton Arp.
Halton Arp. That sounds like something you do on your network. I'm Halton Arp.
Halton Arp.
American physicist and chemist, Nobel Prize laureate, Walter Gilbert, is 86 today.
Also turning 72 today is Welsh-English actor Timothy Dalton.
Known for?
Well, among other things, he was the high... Oh, what is it there? In Doctor Who.
Council. In Doctor Who, he played Rassilon.
I was going for James Bond, but okay.
Timothy Dalton, he played Rassilon in Doctor
Who. Oh,
he
played Rassilon. He was also...
He was James Bond, and he was also Prince Baron in Flash.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I forgot about that. American singer, songwriter, and guitarist, Eddie Money. Was born on this date in 1949. Take me home tonight.
Also turning 65 today is English computer scientist and academic, Steve Ferber.
And also born on this same date in 1962, American actor Matthew Broderick.
He's only a year younger than me?
Here's the kicker. He's the same age as this next person.
American actress, producer, and talk show host Rosie O'Donnell is 56 today.
I would never have imagined Matthew Broderick and Rosie O'Donnell were the same age.
Yep.
She just seems so much older.
Yeah.
We ran out of music.
Are we
recently started over?
No. We're just going to play that out. We'll do the listener birthdays after. Yay! The parade is over. Happy birthday to our listeners for this upcoming week. Crazy Joe Fiore from Megapodtastic. He's got Joe. I got to give you a clue. Go to our wiki and fix it. It still says Megapodzilla and goes to the old URL. So
yeah, he's so disappointing.
His birthday's on the 21st. Yeah, I'm sure there's just everywhere that he's looking for that. The 23rd has two birthdays. Steve Rickyberg, a.k.a. Missing Intellect, formerly of Geek Cred. Richard Parkman is also on the 23rd. On the 25th is Nicholas St. Gabriel. 26, among many other people.
Who is this guy?
Who is this Chuck DiMaggio guy?
Mr. Nimoy?
Yeah, Chuck Tomasi.
My nephew Travis?
Who put this on the calendar?
Yeah.
Who is this Tomasi guy?
We needed to seed the calendar because originally there was nobody there.
Yeah,
to seed it.
It's my birthday on the 26th, and it is also Brenna Baird in Hampton, Virginia. Happy birthday to all of you. If you are not on the birthday calendar, you can go over to the URL right there at chuckchat.com/wiki and get your name on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And I know we were off for like 4 or 5 weeks. So happy birthday to everybody from like February 18th through today.
The present.
I hope you had a wonderful birthday and enjoy another trip around the sun. Thank you. That's the way it was on this day for March 21st, 2018.
To use.
All right. Now, this first one comes up from a personal note. Let me
And the good news keeps on coming.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out why you put this in here, but
because
go for it.
Donna went over to, was it a friend's house? And you said Google Maps said, turn left at the McDonald's.
McDonald's?
It's using landmarks. I think makes total sense, unless they're out of date, of course.
Well, yeah.
Turn left at the place that used to be, you know, Ben Johnson's farm.
Well, I was in my first business trip to the New England area. I was up in Connecticut, where all of the towns have a certain street. And I was like four towns over from where I needed to be. And I called because I just didn't know how to get there. And this was before handheld devices.
Yeah.
And I didn't do the MapQuest thing and print it out, which I used to do.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then always wound up in the middle of a field. But I called the guy and he said, yeah, you go down here and then there's a rusted out 57 Chevy and you'll turn right there. And then Clarabelle the cow, you'll turn left at her.
Well, you're supposed to stop and ask, are you Clarabelle or are you Becky?
Yes. Or something equally as crazy. I mean, the directions were like kooky.
And you want to turn a ride that is like two stops before the red barn?
Like, oh my God. I was lucky I got there.
That's why I said, what's next? You're nailing it. Yeah. I want to see the Google Maps with that on it. The irrelevant instructions.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know if that's an option you have to turn on or it's just going to start doing that.
Oh, I hope not. But it doesn't start doing that.
Really? You don't think that would be helpful?
Well, but yeah,
a lot of times road signs aren't easy to see.
Well, that's true.
But the nice thing
I want the hybrid.
Yeah.
Well, if it said, yeah, turn left at Osgood Street where the Starbucks is. Yeah.
You know, but the neat thing, at least with maps now, I mean, I know Keith sometimes prefers to use Google Maps, but I know that with the maps that is on the iOS devices, at least now they're kind of, you know, if possible, they're kind of warning you ahead of time, right turn coming up or a left turn coming up. So you have that advantage in most cases.
In most cases.
Yes.
Turn left at the crack house. Okay.
Exactly. Well, which one?
There's four on this block. Don't you know what you're talking about?
Okay, Google, take me to my pot drop-off. Hey, turn left at the crack house. I had to turn my Google Home off, sorry.
And speaking of additive information.
Hey Siri.
NASA wants your pictures of clouds to verify its satellite data. Craig, why don't you take this one?
Sure. So NASA announced this week that it's looking for some citizen scientists to help out with a project. Six orbiting instruments make up NASA's clouds and Earth's radiant energy system, Ceres.
Series?
Anyway, Ceres, whatever. Serious. I'm serious. Project, and they are used to study the Earth's climate and the role clouds play in climate change. But sometimes it's hard for the instruments to differentiate clouds from other earthly objects.
Snow?
Like buildings. Maybe snow, I guess.
Crack houses?
Trombone up there? Instruments?
McDonald's?
Clouds? What?
No, it says the instruments.
Oh, yes. It's hard for these instruments.
Yeah. It can be.
Harmonicas.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the harmonica. That's
accordions.
Oh, yeah. Not enough air up there.
Keep going, Craig.
Yeah, okay. So, for example, NASA says that thin, wispy cirrus clouds and snow can easily be confused because they're both cold and bright. Differentiation gets even more difficult when these clouds hang out above the patches of snow, and that's where citizen scientists come in. So NASA is looking for people to take pictures of clouds in the sky and share them through an app. If you time the photos to coincide with Cirrus satellites passing overhead, okay, I guess the app would tell you that. Take a good guess. NASA can compare the images taken from the instruments with images taken from the individuals down below and make sure what's being noted by satellites as clouds really being, well, a cloud. Looking at what the observer recorded as clouds and looking at the surface observations really help us better understand the images that we're getting, matched from satellite.
Well, that is feeding the data for the AI. That's what it's doing.
Yeah, it's like playing that game with Google.
It's making it a little smarter.
Yeah, it's just saying, okay, we've seen this from up above, and this is what we've seen below, so that they can start doing an algorithm to say, is it truly a cloud, or is it snow, or is it a cloud above snow?
Well, are we saying they're giving ammunition to Skynet to start doing weather control?
I don't know if I find this totally valuable, because, A, we live in Phoenix. There really aren't a whole lot of clouds, except for certain times of year.
Well,
monsoon.
We have the chemtrails, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's a.
They're all straight, so you can tell.
I think it makes sense.
If you're in a snowy country, it's like, okay, the weather in Alaska, well, there's snow on the ground, and we have clouds above. We're not sure if we're looking at clouds or snow. Hey, send a signal out to the app to all the people in Anchorage. Yeah. Hey, Anchorage, would you go take a picture? They're going to go, oh, hell no, it's too cold.
Exactly.
I have to take my gloves off for that.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just going to work at all.
Or those gloves to operate the app on my phone are too expensive.
So we will resume.
Resume? Where were we?
Resume.
We will resume. We're not going to let Craig read his last paragraph?
No, we'll move on from the news story.
No, I think that's what right cursed here.
It. You have a note.
Wait, I got to finish this last little bit.
His OCD is killing him.
Finish the last little bit.
I can't move on.
I'm just going to hang up on Skype now. Are you serious? Do you want to finish reading that story, or are we moving on?
Yeah. There's just like
then
not
go!
The whole thing. All right, look. You can submit up to 10 photos between now and April 15th through the Global Observer app. There.
Yep. Thank you.
I'll look for that. I'll look for that. Thank you, Craig.
By the way, this is a very important time for this project because the seasons are changing.
We have our Apple fanboys in the room. Who would like to take a Steve Job half-ass job application article?
Oh, I guess it's going to be me then.
Let's take a half-ass article to a half-ass podcast.
Yeah. Well, better half-ass than full-assed. Or dumb-ass.
Everybody's
or
got a big...
But smart-ass.
Ass.
What?
Okay, I think the screen is finished redrawing for the fifth time.
Okay, but I think I can read it now. Apple co-founder Steve Jobs is remembered today as a genius Renaissance man, but he was once just a dirtbag kid who was bad at filling out job applications. One application from 1973 just sold for $174,757.
Wow.
Along with other Jobs-related items, the application far exceeded its estimate.
Was it a job for a job?
I'm not answering that. RR Auction finalized a staggering sale on Thursday, and it's surely quite pleased, but don't call me Shirley, with the results considering its expectation was set at more than $50,000. The sale price is even more impressive when you consider that the same item sold at Bonham's last December for $18,750.
Someone just got a good return on their investment.
Yeah.
Ripped.
At that rate of increase, Jobs could beat his hero Leonardo da Vinci's auction record in no time. The bidder was anonymous.
Well, you got applause too.
Yes.
Well.
And other items up for auction included a newspaper clipping from the launch of the iPhone 3G that was signed by Jobs and former senior VP of Apple's iPod division, Tony Fadell. It sold for $26,950, while a signed Mac OS X manual. Oh, my God. OS X, Mac's OS X manual went for $41,806. Both items included backstories of the original owners having to twist Steve's arm, ouch, to get an autograph, a practice he typically refused to take part in. The co-signer of the manual said that Jobs told him, "I feel weird doing that," at first, but after some prodding, he said, "Give me those," referring to the pen and manual, and signed away.
Just the fact that there was a manual.
I know. Yeah. A manual.
A hard copy manual.
Yeah. Mm. It's hard enough to find how to turn the damn thing on the website anymore.
And it's easy to see why the job application, see what I did there, embedded below, was the hot item. It's more than just a rare signature. It's a window into the day-to-day struggles of a young college dropout reluctantly doing the man's bidding.
So it says, name, Steve Jobs. Address. Was it Need College? Phone,
I can't
none. Major, English, lit. Year, blank. Past employment, most recent first, blank and blank and blank. Reason for leaving, blank. Driver's license, yes. Access to transportation, possible but not portable.
Probable.
Probable. His handwriting wasn't the best. And skills, typing, none. Machines, key punch, blank. Computer, yes. Design tech is what he wrote. Calculator, yes.
Other. Yes, I know how to work a calculator.
Well, special abilities, electronics tech or design engineer, digital something, something, something.
Something, something, something.
This you know, somebody spent $174,000 for this piece of paper.
1973, position desired, blank. Wow. That's
a man with ambition.
He was preoccupied.
Never would have seen that one coming.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I was thinking of that OS X manual.
Yeah. You
know, OS X came out, what, like 2000, 2001?
About 2000, yeah.
About, yeah.
Look how long they've had that. I mean, there's been some iterations of it, but still.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Which a long time. You know, 17 years, 18 years.
Well, the fact that the Macintosh is still around after 34 years, that's pretty impressive, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, quick break. We'll be right back with the hopefully entertaining part of the show.
Yeah, maybe we'll start.
Greetings from TG Geeks Webcast, where
Ben
and Keith, the two gay geeks, talk about all aspects of geekdom and nerdery. Sci-fi, comics, film, horror, genre, you name it, we talk about it.
Find our episodes each week on tggeeks.com.
Visit our Facebook page, TG Geeks Webcast.
On Google Plus and YouTube, look for us as Two Gay Geeks. You can tweet at TG Geeks and at the Two Gay Geeks.
Or call our feedback line at 469-TG-GEEKS, that is 469-844-3357. Happy listening. Peace.
Cheers.
Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, coming at you right from Portal 47 and all things Trekland. And you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I totally forgot we had that ID from Larry because I was looking through our episodes folder. You know, lighting up the images for today's show. And I found this thing that said, Larry Nemechek outtakes. I went, oh? Must listen.
Oh, really?
And he says, hey, everybody, this is Larry Nemechek coming to you straight from Trekland and Portal 47. And you are listening to Treknorama with Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, we should change our show to Treknorama. Now, this was like a year and a half before we even conceived the topic as Trek, yeah. Podcast. All right, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
We should have called the other show Treknorama, Craig.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Let's see if we can talk Clinton into changing it now.
Yeah. No. Change the website.
Why did I buy these domains for 8 years?
I got to order business cards again.
We were going to build that into the ID, but I didn't want to humiliate him every time we played. All right, we have a Hex and Strange Stories. Hex and Strange Stories. All right, the fastest machine to solve a Rubik's Cube. Guess how fast this machine can solve it.
Oh, I've seen this. Like, yeah. It's like 10
seconds. You
can't
even watch it fast.
It's a blur.
About a year ago last March, a robot called Sub-1 solved Rubik's Cube in 0.637 seconds, earning it the Guinness World Book of Record for being the fastest cube-solving bot. That honor now appears to be in jeopardy. However, a pair of engineers have demonstrated a new robot that can solve Rubik's Cube in almost half that time, a mere 0.38 seconds.
I don't even think that's possible.
Got to be kidding.
Well, I'm glad
they solved the other problems.
I'm calling shenanigans because this doesn't, a real Rubik's Cube would fly apart.
Exactly. It couldn't take the physical stress.
Yeah. They do have one short video where it does fall apart.
Oh, yeah.
And they
pieces
show
just
it.
Just fly everywhere.
Like, They showed it at 0.03 times speed, and it does about 10 moves. You can see it go whoop, spin here, spin there, spin there, and it just kind of gets caught up on itself. It goes.
I would love to see that.
It's great. Follow the show notes through that, and you will. Actually, you know what? We might be able to do that.
Yes. No, I was just going to say, it doesn't look like a normal Rubik's Cube. It looks like it's made so
you can attach it can the move.
Oh, there it went.
Yeah, we've got it on this end. And now watch. At 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right here. Nope. There.
Oh, there. Yeah. You tried to.
I've had that happen in my hands while I solved mine way back.
Yeah, you try to go so fast, and especially if it's really loosened up.
Yes,
because you can
seasoned
get
cube.
A little side. Yeah, you can actually get that thing really, cube. Really loosened up, so you can just kind of like hit a row, and it'll just spin mad. And if you don't do it, if you do it just right, it'll undergo atomic fission right in your hands.
Get a little side cube there.
Well, it just seems like that this is a specially made cube. It doesn't look like
an official Rubik's.
Look at the centerpieces.
Mm-hmm.
They got these rounded corners, so I guess they don't, rub and catch on each other.
Yeah, that's he's right. It does.
The color
doesn't even look right either.
The colors are wrong. So yeah. I mean, physically, it's the same attributes. I mean, it's spinning on the different X, Y, Z axes.
It's a knockoff.
Yeah, well, that's what I learned on.
Yeah, total knockout.
Well, wait a minute. What I'm getting at is how can you certify that in Guinness if it's not, in fact, a real Rubik's Cube? It's just a knockoff.
It has a black side. I was like, well, there was never any black on a real Rubik's. You know what?
No, wait a minute. The Rubik's Cube was black and it had stickers on it.
Right, but this has a totally black side.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just saying that it looks like these pieces are, it's just been especially made for this. So.
I have to wonder if they did this, especially made so the computer's cameras can pick up on it.
Right.
It was a Rubik's Cube or just some cube they found that they made. I don't know.
It's a knockoff. It's a Rupert's Cube.
Rupert's Cube. It's a Cubert Cube.
Let's give a shout out to those brave souls who have come back to us from the chat room.
God, we feel sorry for you.
We had a technical interruption. I've got Clinton, and Tim. Who do you see?
Well, John, I'll tell you what, I'll throw John in there because he was on there earlier, and Tim Elliott. Those are the two at least I saw.
If you want to watch this, join us every Sunday night, or at least a Sunday is where we're physically capable of doing this, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or whatever that happens to be in your part of the world. We'd love to see you on Facebook, or you can go over to our YouTube page and catch us later there. We usually release that on Monday. All right, we have a Remember When?
A Remember When?
Yes, we do. Speaking of strange things... Oh, Keith, I don't think you've read a news story yet.
Oh, do I have to? Yes.
Many centuries...
I was scrolling way too fast.
Yeah, gosh, I was trying to read the headline.
Go ahead.
Ancient D20 die emerges from the ashes of time.
Is it German? Would it be a D20D?
Possibly, yeah. Many centuries before...
I don't know, it's Egyptian. Go ahead.
It's Egyptian.
Egyptian.
Let him read.
He's going to interrupt me,
many
I know.
Centuries
many
before.
Centuries before Dungeons and Dragons was even a glimmer in the eye of Gary Gygax, ancient Egyptians were rolling a D20 die.
D20D.
Look at that.
I'm trying to scroll, but the ads are slowing me down.
Scrolling.
Die.
Now I have to hope I stop scrolling in time. Yeah.
Let's go back in time. Back. Keep going. Okay, stop.
I tried. It went too far.
It scrolled
too
far.
I've got browser lag from all the embedded ads.
You mean to read it?
No, there we go. Stop. You're in the Ptolemaic period. It's somewhere around 304 to 30 BC. You're
somewhere,
in Egypt.
Somewhere in that area.
Somewhere,
wow.
Yeah.
Tuesday.
On a Tuesday, yeah.
It's about 3 p.m. in the hour, yeah.
You're playing Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. With real dungeons and real dragons. Except back then, it's more like pyramids and...
Pitsukas?
Go for it.
That.
Pistachios.
Pistachios. Pistachios, yes.
Pistachios.
The Metropolitan Museum of Art owns what may be the old's worldest D20 die. It's made out of serpentine and looks to be in remarkably good shape for its age.
And they knew how to build things to make them last.
Yeah, the symbols for Eta, Theta, and Epsilon can be clearly seen. Maybe it was just used to determine what frat the ancients were going to pledge.
For sorority.
But I like to think it was used to roll for hit points for warrior and sphinx classes. Now all we need is for someone to 3D model this so we can print it out and make up our own ancient Egyptian version of D&D.
Set has attacked.
Yeah.
You are being attacked by Imhotep. Which weapon do you choose?
Yeah. Immolation.
For Imhotep. I think it looks pretty cool, though. I'd like to have a whole set that looks like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay, so these are Greek letters?
Looks like Epsilon, Eta, Theta.
They look Greek, yeah.
It's okay. All Greek to me.
When I'm not an ancient Egyptian historian, but when did Egyptian letters become part of?
Or when did Greek letters become
Greek
part
letters
of
become part of Egyptian?
I don't know. It may have been imported from Greece because it says it's the
had all the best dye.
It's the Ptolemaic era.
Okay,
so you know, I mean, they probably exchanged technology.
They probably did. The Mediterranean trade industry was big back then.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, so at first I was thinking this was shenanigans, but I could see it.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. You rolled a chi.
Yeah, a chi or an epsilon.
Again?
When I roll a
sigma chi. I rolled a sigma. A smegma, what?
What?
No. Let's not go there.
Craig.
Yes.
Did you used to play Q-Bert when you were a kid?
All the time. On my 2600 in the
Keith
arcade.
Keith hates that game.
Who?
Keith hates that game.
I hate it.
I always jumped off the edge.
I did too.
I loved playing it at home. I even had it on the Commodore 64, but the problem was, you know, the joystick is right, left, up, and down at home. On the arcade, it was like diagonal, so it would work right, but...
Your joystick at a 45-degree angle. What's your problem?
I did, because then it's at an angle, and it feels weird holding it. Anyway.
Oh, for a soundbite of that.
Yeah. It's like us reviewing
those old
now.
iPod. Remember those old iPod covers we reviewed?
You've just been immortalized again, Craig.
Yeah, all right. Like, I need that anymore. All right, so... So this a computer was trained to play Q-Bert, and it immediately broke the game in a way no human ever has. That sounds like Q-Bert right there. So while the jury was still out on whether today's machine learning techniques will ever create a program that could rival human intelligence, one thing about the future of artificial intelligence is clear. The machines are really good at playing games. And when the machines get good at playing games, sometimes they come up with bizarre strategies and tactics that humans would never.
Yep.
I'm going to patent that. So, for example, in the new unpreviewed paper posted by
He's on Ready Player One, right?
Yeah.
Artemis.
Which saw through a tweet from researcher Miles Brundage, three researchers from the University of Fernburg in Germany trained an agent using evolutionary strategies to play eight different Atari games from over 30 years ago. One of the games was Q-Bert. The AI found a way to exploit the bug between the levels, making the entire stage flash, then rack up unlimited points.
Jeez.
There is a video of this. You've got to watch it. AI just starts jumping around when it clears the first level. All of a sudden, you know, it looks like, hey, you cleared the first level, but it never goes on to the second level. It just, the whole, all the squares that you normally land on start flashing like this disco fever thing. Oh, and he's jumping around, not making really any pattern, never going to level two, just going points, 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 points. There's no Coily never comes along. Oh, the ball never comes.
Really?
It's just free for all.
The AI learned to cheat.
Yeah. It found a bug in the system.
It found a bug. Now, this must be on the Atari 2600 version, because if you look at the graphics, they look really
That's what it says earlier, that it was the Atari version.
Yeah, this isn't the stand-up games. Arcade game.
No, that is not the graphics from the arcade game. That is pretty cool.
Amazing. Well, you've heard about Alexa talking to Siri?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That you talk about Skynet.
Oh, yeah. You know,
the AI today is, it's terrifying.
It's getting there. It's getting there.
Then you've got, you know, the computers that are playing the video games. I mean, that's like, you know.
War games.
War games.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm prepared to welcome my computerized overlords any day now.
I'm working hard on finishing that app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, there's an app for that.
Isn't everyone?
So you're the one who's responsible for Alexa making that maniacal laugh.
The laugh. That was kind of creepy.
Did that happen to you?
You don't have the recording of that.
I never triggered that. Oh, dear. But I watched videos, and it is that would be creepy.
Out of the blue, she'd start laughing. It's like, yikes.
Whoops. We've got you where you want. We want you.
Usually you can tell when you wake it up. I've woken up on close approximations to Alexa. And the TV will always get it when they play something like that. And it's supposed to, I thought they were getting immune to artificial signals like TV. But yeah, you would normally
hear
that.
That's what they want you to think.
You normally hear when you trigger the keyword, the wake word, whether it's Alexa or Echo or whatever, that you hear the bloom. I did not hear that. That's what's creepy.
Yeah.
Is you're just talking along, all of a sudden you hear that. What the?
Yeah. Well, poltergeist.
Is there someone in the house? Yeah, it was poltergeist.
Wake word, my foot. It's always listening.
It is always listening.
Yep.
And now you don't have to wake it up every time. They have this stay awake feature.
So, okay.
I can say, Alexa, turn on the living room. Okay, turn on the foyer. Okay, turn on the backyard. So you've got like a 2-second window before you have to use the wake word again. So you can keep chaining these things along, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. We were talking about that, the Colossus, the Forbin Project, and all of these, you know, AI things that have become megalomaniacs, you know, and controlled the world, Skynet. And
sorry, Dave, I can't do that.
Yes, exactly.
I could say, Chuck, you know, getting a glass of milk out of the fridge and the thing starts going, drop the milk.
I got to get a maniacal laugh for my
turn off
soundboard.
Left bedside. Okay. Special thanks to our patrons. Speaking of maniacal. Thank you to you. This show is brought to you by you, our wonderful patrons. These are the people who go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and donate as little as $1 a show to keep the show going. And thank you. We'll give you the shout out. The roll call is Kyle Nishioka, who wrote us earlier in the show. Avner Braverman, who's been around forever. Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mr. Megapodtastic is our newest and latest and greatest patron. Thank you very much. Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
Not John Noble.
Not that John Noble.
Predictable.
See, you miss us,
as
don't you?
The monsoons, I tell you. Chris MC, Alexis Duran. You know, I'm just going to have to record that part now so that when you're not here, we'll just throw that in as its own audio clip. Saturday Morning Media.
Steve Theremin.
Not Theremin.
Oh.
Wait, no, we could do that. There, now he's got his own theme. And Jorgos Rowan, whom we're going to try and see when we go over to London in May. We'll see if we can get together with Jorga for the first ever time ever.
Where's mine?
What are you looking for?
Oh, I was looking for my theremin so we could have dueling theremins again.
Take your theremin in the morning.
Yeah.
20 milligrams daily. It's
a good
thing.
We still have more show left.
We have more show. It seems like it's been going on forever if we didn't have that technical breakdown in the middle. All right. I found this on Facebook. Thought it was fun. Take any Star Wars quote and replace one word with sausage.
Sausage. Mm.
The sausage is strong in this one.
Of course, that one came up.
I had one in there, too.
I contributed
one.
I got a bad feeling about sausage. Yeah.
This was your father's sausage. It's the weapon of the Jedi Knight.
Ow, my sausage.
I think one of my favorites was, judge me by my sausage.
Where do you...
Oh my gosh.
A lot of them were from A New Hope, but they said, wow, this actually makes episode 3 bearable.
I'm trying to remember the one that I came up with.
Someone want to get this walking sausage out of my way?
Yeah.
You stuck up, half-witted, scruffy sausage herder.
Yeah. Well, somebody get this walking sausage out of my way.
Was it Princess Leia was telling Han Solo?
Yeah.
You know that he's not my brother. He's my sausage. No.
Do or do not. There is no sausage.
Help me, Obi-Wan sausage.
Or aren't you a little short for a sausage?
There you go. She made the Kessel run in less than 12 sausages. I was going to say she made the sausage run in less than 12 parsecs.
Oh, there's
this is my sausage. I made a lot of special modifications to it.
Yeah.
Ben, you said you had one in here?
Yeah, I had one in there, but I can't find it. I don't know which one it is.
Ben, I'm not finding it. Maybe it was on a different thread. Maybe
no, I think it was that one because I recognized the graphic.
Let's keep scrolling. Must keep scrolling. Scrolling. Man, this Xander McDonald guy really went overboard, didn't he?
Yeah. There's some really good ones in there. I mean, and if I think long and hard enough, I could come up with some really good ones.
Christiana Ellis, every word of what you just said was sausage.
Whoa, I got to think about that one.
That's the creepy baby from Alexa.
Yeah. It's actually
Crazy
Joe's baby.
Have fun. Let us know what you want to write and change yours. I'm surprised that, you know, so many of them were centered on the well-known quotes around A New Hope.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's
remember.
Obviously tells you that's where the most memorable quotes come one. From.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, the force will be with you, sausage.
The sausage will be with you.
His sausage count is high.
Use the sausage, Luke.
Yeah.
Use the sausage. I am your sausage. No!
Oh, is this about Joust the movie?
Oh, it could be.
Oh, boy.
Let's see. I should play that.
What happens when two middle-aged guys find something from their childhood?
Man, I love this old arcade.
Yeah, this is cool.
Dude, look, Joust!
Cool. Want a duel?
You are on.
And something goes terribly wrong.
Here is my lucky quarter.
Now they're in for the flight of their lives.
Whoa, awesome. Look at all the lava. And I got a lance.
Me too. What do we do with them?
Oh, yeah? I got an idea.
Ow! What'd you do that for?
I always wanted to do that.
They must learn to do battle or die.
Nice, ostrich. Nice, ostrich.
So are we going to eat these things or what?
Eat? No. Sit on them and fly.
Ostriches don't fly. Besides, I'm not going to sit on that bird.
Pterodactyl!
All right, I'm getting on.
And now the battle has begun.
Hey, look! Someone else is on an ostrich!
I see him! Let's fly over!
He's getting close! Hey, watch out!
It's a Shadow Lord, and I think he wants to fight!
If it's a fight he wants, that's a fight he gets!
He's swinging around!
Two men, two birds, one goal in a world of hurt. Joust the movie. Coming this Christmas.
This Christmas? I can't wait.
Wait a minute, which Christmas was that?
Doesn't matter. It's evergreen material.
It's evergreen material. Right. It's this Christmas.
Yeah.
Always could, this Christmas.
You could play it on December 29th. It's coming this Christmas.
You know what? When I wrote that, I still visualize all the things I was thinking of when I was writing it, you know? Like you going, nice sausage with your hands up in the nice sausage trying to all charm right. it.
Our okay. article. Who hasn't read one in a while?
You.
Ben.
Okay, fine.
Oh, Chuck.
Play Joust, Robotron 2048, and other classic games at Ready Player One's online arcade.
Oh, far out.
A big appeal of Ernie Cline's novel Ready Player One was its reverence toward the pop culture of the 1980s. From movies to video games, as the big screen Steven Spielberg adaptation inches closer to theaters, the marketing masterminds at Warner Brothers have been tapping into that nostalgia with Easter egg-filled trailers, and now there's an online arcade with a number of vintage games to play. Ready Player One takes place nearly 30 years in the future, with references to 30 years in the past,
yeah.
when the real world has fallen into dystopic disrepair and citizens find refuge in massive, interconnected online world known as the Oasis. When the creator of the system dies, he leaves behind a treasure hunt where fans can solve puzzles and clues based on 80s pop culture in order to win the grand prize, the control of the Oasis itself. The marketing campaign for the films followed suit, using QR codes to unlock hidden featurettes and dropping riddles on Twitter that, when solved, allowed fans to unlock various games. Such as this one from James Halliday. Quench your thirst for a challenge of pure speed and skill, with no room for error and no time to spill. What is this, the 18th quatrain?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that's how all the holiday riddles were in Ready Player One.
Risk your life to get inside the enemy's lair, but if you find your ID, you haven't, if they find your ID, you haven't a prayer.
I have no idea what that's supposed to refer to.
I don't either.
I do, but it's Avatar, and you don't want to figure out who you are.
The vintage game hunt started with the arcade classic Joust, but in the days since, several other games have been unlocked in the online arcade. Currently, Root Beer Tapper.
Oh, dear.
Sinistar.
Beware, I live.
And Robotron 2048 are also available. And there's still more to be revealed. It's a neat way to give fans a taste of the 80s nostalgia before they see the film, and clever diversion for anyone who's eager to try a game that might have been played years ago, provided they haven't already come across the Internet Archive of Plethora Clan.
Yeah,
they're all there, yeah. But for some reason, I liked Root Beer Tapper. You ever play that?
Oh, yeah. I think I played more of it on the Apple II.
Oh, yeah.
So, that'll be fun. When is the release date of the movie?
March 30th.
That soon.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
29th. Is it 30th? Okay.
Well,
30th. Oh, it is. It's right there at the bottom. March 30th.
Well, it's actually probably going to be March 29th because that's a Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
So, okay. But you two guys, you're pretty plugged into stuff.
I
think we heard some early reviews from, SXSW?
South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So, what have you heard?
I haven't heard anything.
Nope.
You haven't?
No. Haven't heard a peep about the movie.
I heard a pretty positive
last week were that there were not going to be any Star Wars references, but then the news changed as recently in the last 24 hours as we record this that yes, there will be Star Wars references.
Wow. Well, we had a conversation on our show with Jonathan Latt about this because he's a huge Ready Player One fan. And clearly, there are some things they're not going to be able to do in the movie like they could in the book because of certain licensing rights. Like, I want to see Ultraman show up, but I don't think Ultraman will. Yet, I don't recall Iron Giant being a part of Ready Player One in the book, yet he's there in the trailer. So
that's the Ultra Giant.
Yeah, so there's obviously going to be a lot of liberties being taken.
Well,
I was going to say, Spielberg has said that he doesn't want to venture too far into his own pop culture lexicon.
Yeah. I think a lot of the swap outs is probably because Warner Brothers does have a lot of property already. So they don't have to go license it again in a lot of cases. And I think they did replace Ultraman with Iron Giant, which I would rather see Iron Man Ultraman pop up.
Iron Man, sure.
Iron Man.
Yeah, no, I'd rather it's the Ultraman pop up. That'd be really cool. I was a huge Ultraman fan of that guy.
Yeah, Iron Man shows up.
Wait. You're on the wrong franchise here. Back over.
I was way off franchise with the Iron Sheik.
Iron Sheik.
Remember the old wrestling guy?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Former WWF champion.
Was that when it was WWF?
WWF, yeah.
Probably before it was WWF.
No, actually, it was during WWF.
He
took the title. World Wildlife Foundation?
That's right, the world. Yeah,
he beat up pandas.
Yeah, and the panda was named Bob Backlund.
Rowdy, oh, Roddy Panda. All right, that takes us to the end of the show.
I got nothing.
Our question of the week is, what is your first memory? Ooh. Oh, I think that would have had to have been the 128K upgrade.
What?
It was K back then, kids. Look it up.
Exactly. I at one time in my 286 Epson, I had a 40 megabyte hard drive. Oh my God, it was huge.
I couldn't tell you. Your spreadsheets were only 200K each.
If that.
Now you can't even open a Word document without 11 meg.
Bill Gates said that 128K was enough for anybody.
640. Actually, no one would everybody need more than 640.
640?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
But they cut the quote off. It was like times 1,000.
Yeah. I will never need 640 gigabytes of memory.
I think it was referring to his paycheck. Nobody will ever need more than 640K a week.
Yeah.
A day. We want to know your first memory. Let us know. Call us on the listener line at 707-530-2428. Waiting for it. Anyway, or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. There's plenty of ways to get a hold of us. Facebook, look up Technorama Podcast, YouTube, Technorama. The whole thing.
Rama, Rama, Rama.
That takes us to the end of the show. Yes.
No.
Thank you, gentlemen. Oh, Tell the listeners where they can find your show.
TGGeeks.com. There we go.
And you just had an interview with a very interesting personality.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to spill that? Or
it will
waiting?
Be.
That'll come out a week from Monday.
Well, this will come out Wednesday. So
the 26th.
I think the timeline still lines up. Our episode
where we'll talk to Gigi Edgley from Farscape. Chiana.
Cool. I feel like it turned into rain.
You know, that's what we used to, when we dropped off the kids at daycare years ago, and the that's what the bathroom sounded like. We'd be hanging up their hats and boots and whatnot, and the bathrooms were on this auto flush cycle, and it sounded like applause. Like, so we'd be hanging up our coats and just go.
That's funny.
It was just the bizarrest sound effect. Yeah. Said it worked both ways. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us.
Our pleasure.
I think that's the music we want to send us out of here. Again, call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. Subscribe to the podcast if you want to get it every week, or the YouTube so you want to get that announcement.
There we are.
Are you still adjusting the sliders? Wait.
Looks like it.
It's V Keith. Virtual Keith?
Yeah, there we go.
You want two beers?
Yeah, two beers.
It's two beers, not two beers. Five. Beer. Yes, this is Roman for five.
Oh, there we go.
Thank you, and join us. Till next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig, would you do us the honors, as always, and give our wonderful listener a binary high five.
101.
Or viewer, or wherever you come from.
How we got
are you
one
consuming
left.
This? Take care.
We have one there. I see it.
Send us out.
101111011.